Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. And my newsmaker for today is Captain Mike Moeller with CAL FIRE. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Mike is the public information officer with CAL FIRE, and you guys have been busy out there. Lots of fires the last week.
We have. We saw extreme Santa Ana condition with high winds, low humidities. We were fortunate, though, that all the fires were picked up less than about 50 acres, besides the one that we did see on Camp Pendleton that currently is about 2,500 acres with a 41% containment.
Yeah, as we speak, and we're taping this on Monday morning, I should add. Now, have you determined the cause of the Lakeside fire that scorched, what, about 28 acres or so over the weekend?
That's correct. The Lakeside fire cause was actually children playing with fire. They were actually playing with a lighter that actually sparked the fire.
Wow. Can parents be held liable for the damage from that?
Absolutely. Depending on what the investigators determine, is that the adults can be held civilly for cost recovery for everything, including aircraft on that fire.
So, folks, you want to keep a close eye on what the kids are doing there and make sure they don't have access to lighters or matches or anything else that can start a fire.
Absolutely. And we talk about this, children playing with fire, not only in a wildland environment, but even in the home. Obviously, personal injury to the kids is our priority, but what can happen if they are playing? So we ask parents not only, obviously, keep an eye on them, but educate your children on the importance of fire safety and the actual consequences that can happen.
Absolutely. Now, what's the forecast looking like for later in the week? Are these very dry conditions going to continue through next weekend, Mike?
Well, the weather models right now are showing for rain Wednesday, Thursday. Some of it will be measurable closer to the coastal areas, but we want to remind your listeners that we still have several Santa Ana events that are in the long-range forecast. We'd have to have over 2 inches of rain to really look at where we may not be into what we consider peak fire season.
Yeah, which is certainly coming up. October, of course, is the months that we've had the most devastating fires in our region. The Cedar Fire, which is about to have its 10-year anniversary in October, and also the 2007 wildfires, the Witch Creek and all the rest of them. Now, Mike, did you work some of those large fires? Were you here then?
Yes. In 2003, I actually was with CAL FIRE, Riverside County Fire. I was here on a strike team, actually on an engine, and we were here for about 2.5 weeks on the Cedar Fire. And if you talk to any firefighter, depending on where you were on that fire, you'll never forget it. It was a career fire is what we say sometimes, that you just the fire activity, the fire conditions, and then the enormity of the size of the fire alone.
Where exactly were you doing the fire?
I was up near Miramar Air Force Base there, near the airfield, where it actually had jumped the 15 freeway when we got there. Then we were moved over to Scripps Ranch area.
Was that really surprising to you that a fire could move that quickly? I think a lot of people were shocked to wake up that morning. I certainly was. And to see that this thing that started during the night was already burned into the urban areas of San Diego.
Yes, it was. And we saw a wind-driven fire. In fact, when we were coming into the county and seeing some of the fire run along the freeway, it was actually moving faster than we were on the freeway. I mean, it was it looked like a war zone when we pulled into the county.
My goodness. Wow. Are there any other stories that you'd like to share with our listeners from those difficult days?
Well, I think that for your listeners to remember is that there was heroic actions, not only by your public safety employees, mm-hmm. but the way that San Diego reacted, civilians on helping each other, that we could go on for hours with stories. But I just think that the community was such a devastating wildfire. We saw acts of kindness and bravery throughout the county just from civilians. So when we see such a devastating wildfire, it was the human kindness that we saw out there was pretty amazing.
Now, a lot's been done to try to improve safety since then. Can you give us a couple of highlights and Also, please explain to us what listeners can do to make your job easier and to help minimize the chances that another fire would get that out of control.
Well, I think some of the things that we've seen since the Cedar, and remember, anytime we have a large fire or any type of incident, the fire department always learns, you know, what can we do better? What went wrong? What went right? Mm-hmm. The Cedar fire, we've seen improvement in communications across the board, not only CAL FIRE, but also with our cooperators throughout the county. We have several fire agencies, the support of the Board of Supervisors. We have new technology on our aircraft, increased staffing, increased equipment. And again, our county fire chiefs work collectively on a monthly basis to determine and go off of reports from the Cedar Fire. And I really think that we've come leaps and bounds since that. And it's evident on just an initial response that we see every day.
What else should the public know to be as prepared as possible for an emergency or an evacuation?
Well, you know, Miriam, we always talk about being evacuated or being prepared. We have a program. It's called Ready, Set, Go. It's under readyforwildfire.org. But Ready, Set, Go really is that. That's what it is. Are you really ready? Take a look at your home. Do you have the important papers? Remember, if you are evacuated and you can't get home, do you have your medications, important documents, contact numbers, something that you may be away for a couple weeks that you can't access your home?
Very good point.
And you need to exercise not only having those important documents, medications, those kind of things that you need, but exercise that plan with your family. I know we talk about it. Yes, we're prepared. But are you really prepared? Does your family really know? What if you're not home? Where's your family going to meet? Make sure you have a phone tree and make sure your yard is prepared. We always talk about that defensible space.
Mm-hmm. Crucial.
It is crucial. And we want the listeners to know that defensible space isn't only obviously to save your property, but it gives those firefighters, unfortunately, we can't put a fire engine at every house. But when a fire engine or a strike team goes into an area, they do what's called triage. They're going to look at homes, and homes that have defensible space, pretty much what we're asking is you provide the offense. When an engine gets there, we'll provide the defense. That gives us that fighting opportunity to protect your home.
Because not having that defensible space not only makes the house vulnerable, but it puts firefighters at risk if they were to try to go into a dense tangle of brush and try to save that.
That's correct. And a simple thing that your listeners can remember is have a very visible address. It sounds silly, but it's so important to have a visible address from the road. It makes the difference for engine companies and law enforcement when they come into that area.
Yeah, and even for medical.
Absolutely.
Medical
for 911, your medical, just straight across the board. Make sure, take a look at your address. If you can't see it at night, or you can't even, or you blow past it, mm-hmm. make sure you have a very large address. Even use reflective material if possible.
Yeah, I've heard too that it's a good idea to leave, you know, put a big sign on the garage door. If you have a water source on the property, if there's a pool or a jacuzzi or a pond or something out back that firefighters can use, is that helpful to you?
It is. And what we'll do when we talk about that triage, the strike team will go in and they'll actually survey the area. So yes, if there's some way you can mark that you do have some type of water source, that is great, but please don't let it slow you down if you are asked to evacuate. But yes, any type of marking would be helpful if you do have a water source.
There you go. Now, we've had some questions raised recently. I know you're not directly involved with the County Fire Authority, but CAL FIRE itself is, and we've heard, you know, some mixed reviews, some places where it's working out pretty well and some other places where there have been some issues. But in particular, it's been brought to our attention that there's been many, many dark days in Boulevard and to a lesser degree Hecumbe and some others. Boulevard, I was told, has had, you know, dozens of dark days in the last few months. When we are in fire season, are you aware of that, and what can be done to better protect people? I certainly wouldn't want to call for help out there and find out that nobody's answering the phone or nobody's close by, I should say, to respond.
Sure. No, that is a concern. Am I aware of that exact situation? No. But as your listeners know, yes, CAL FIRE and San Diego County Fire Authority are one. Mm-hmm. We are merging the stations. In fact, that's one of the improvements since the Cedar Fire is that we don't have all these separate entities. We'll bring them under one umbrella, same training, same communication, same response. But as far as those dark days, no, that is of concern. We want to have staffed fire stations. So that is something that definitely have to look in and then advise the community of what mm-hmm. exactly is happening out there.
Yeah, if you can get back to us with an answer on that, of what's going to be done to improve that, hopefully something can be done, and we would love to pass that along to our listeners and to our readers at East County Magazine.
Absolutely. That would be a priority to make sure that I get that information.
Very good. Now, another concern some readers have raised is the federal shutdown going to affect our firefighting? I know you're state, not federal, but I'm sure you're in touch with these guys. What's the answer?
Well, we just, in the past few days, we've had a Santa Ana condition. We work very close with our federal partners, the United States Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management on the federal side. I could tell you that no, we have not seen any issues as far as response and equipment. In fact, the Forest Service assisted with additional engines and aircraft staged in the San Diego County area, even though that we have that government shutdown. So right now, no, have we seen it from the state side? We haven't seen an impact from the federal side at all.
And we understand that some of the National Guardsmen who service those aircraft, the mechanics and so forth, have been furloughed. How quickly could they be brought back if a fire were to occur that was large?
Well, the large aircrafts or the tankers that we get from the National Guard are available, and those mechanics, from what I understand, can be recalled within hours. They're essential to
that's
the operation.
Okay.
So we want to make sure that we have that ability to call them back, and from what I understand, that is, since it is an essential position, that's something that we can make happen.
Do we have the confirmation that the air traffic control tower at Ramona will remain open?
I don't have that confirmation, but and I'm sure your listeners are wondering, Ramona is one of our air attack bases. We
right.
run two air tankers out of there plus air attack. But people have to remember that, yes, air traffic control tower provides an additional safety, but CAL FIRE works out of non-controlled airspaces throughout California. In fact, our neighboring base, Hemet Ryan, does not have an air traffic control tower. We still are going to operate. So we want people of San Diego to remember the base will not shut down. Do we need a tower? Of course, it adds a safety operation, but we're still going to fly. We're still going to be there.
Very good. Well, that's reassuring, I'm sure, to a lot of folks out there. Let's see, another question we've heard from people in the Chariot Fire, which was another huge fire, burned a lot of houses up on Mount Laguna. And certainly, if not for the hard work of CAL FIRE, it could have been much worse and spread much further. That said, we've had questions from people about why dozers weren't used in certain areas sooner to prevent the spread of the fire from doing as much damage as it did. What would your response be?
Well, our response for that is that that fire, the majority of it was on federal lands. If it wasn't U.S. Forest Service land, it was BLM, Bureau of Land Management. So what we did is some of those areas are considered wilderness areas where no mechanized equipment can go on federal land. So we have to be very careful of those areas. The incident commanders, we're in unified command with our federal partners. They have to talk about that. But your listeners are probably asking why. In a lot of those areas, we can't put dozers in because it is wilderness area. It's protected.
Is there a procedure in place, or do you think one is needed for immediate communication with decision makers at the federal level? Is there ever a time where they can say, you know, we're sorry about that section of wilderness or the whatever wildlife habitat is there, but gee, we've got a choice between saving homes or saving this stretch of wilderness? Do you think that incident commanders, in consultation with someone up high at the federal government, should be able to make that kind of decision?
They do, depending, again, on the issue. Like you said, is it going to be life? Is it going to be property? Absolutely. From the incident commander level, I can tell you not only from the state side but the federal side, the incident commanders have a direct line of communication to their superiors. And, yes, that conversation can occur, and something can be determined. Are we going to put a dozer line here to save these homes? So, yes, there is that operating procedure in place, and I'm sure they exercise it.
Now, we've talked a lot about things that have improved since the Cedar Fire, and a lot has gotten better, I think. Are there some areas, if you could look in your crystal ball or wave your magic wand and, you know, get funding, are there areas that you think still need some improvement? And if so, what changes would you ideally like to see happen to make things even safer?
There's always funding. I mean, obviously, economic times, funding is always something that we look at as far as maybe additional firefighters, additional equipment. Right now, I think where we're heading, and again, with the support of the Board of Supervisors right now, our technology is continued updating of technology. We're using a new system called NICS, which is our Next Generation Incident Command System. That funding is coming. But I think technology-wise, as we keep improving, that would be my magic wand, is we're seeing it happen, and it's going to happen, but it takes some time for it to get there.
How likely do you think, with all the efforts that have been made, with the weather conditions such that they are, that we could have someday another Cedar Fire?
Well, I don't think it's a question of if. I can tell you it's going to be when. Unfortunately, where we live, the Mediterranean-type climate here in San Diego, the conditions we saw just the past few days ago with the Santa Ana winds, we will have another large wind-driven fire, but it's about preparation. And to remind your listeners that 94% of all wildland fires are human caused. That doesn't mean it was arson, but it could be negligence, just not doing the right thing at the right time. So we want to remember that, that prevention can prevent, I mean, it's inevitable we're going to have a fire, but prevention, we want to remind the public, is everybody's job, not just the firefighters, but the public too.
Yes, and I know CAL FIRE likes to remind folks too that if you see something, call it in. Don't assume anybody else reported the fire already unless you see firefighting equipment there.
This is a good time to remind everybody that you can sign up for the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts, which is a free public service that East County Magazine, our nonprofit, provides to the public with help from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. You can sign up for that free at www.eastcountymagazine.org to get email alerts, or you can also get them by following Viejas Alerts on Twitter. And we certainly want to thank CAL FIRE for helping to keep us informed, as many other fire agencies and citizens around the county do, so that we can be on top and keep our listeners informed. You can also tune in to KNSJ 89.1, and now we're putting many of the larger emergency alerts on the radio for folks as well. Where else, Mike, can people get information? They can follow, CAL FIRE does tweets and things now too?
Correct. You can follow CAL FIRE San Diego. That's our Twitter site. Go ahead and follow us. We usually are for our Twitter site, we tweet out large incidents, not only wildfires, and maybe some weather information too we'll put out on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can always go to the CAL FIRE main webpage too when we have large incidents, not only here in San Diego, but statewide, calfire.ca.gov. If you bring it up any search engine, and you can go to the incident page, we'll have information on incidents throughout the county also.
Yeah, that's a very helpful site there. Well, we certainly want to thank you for coming on the air today, Mike. And is there anything else that you'd like to say that I didn't think to ask?
No, just, you know, we live in, we have year-round fire season. We appreciate your listeners. We appreciate what you do and getting the word out to them. So thank you.
Very good. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The FBI reveals that three attacks on the U.S. power grid have occurred in Arkansas. The FBI is offering a $25,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of those responsible. The attacks included setting fire to a substation, cutting down power poles, and rigging a cable in an attempt to cause a train to take down power lines. The attackers also downed high-voltage transmission lines. A warning painted on a control panel read, "You should have expected U.S." While national security experts have long voiced concerns over a terrorist cyber attack on the power grid, these attacks that occurred in August and September were of the low-tech variety, though capable of major disruption. East County Magazine and KNSJ asked SDG&E if any recent local power outages could be the result of sabotage and what steps the utility is taking to protect our power grid. Amber Albrecht, SDG&E spokesperson, responded. She said SDG&E's corporate security and emergency services are aware of the recent incidents. While there have been no incidents of concern in this region, we have notified law enforcement in San Diego and Imperial counties, she noted. Albrecht added that SDG&E has security measures in place to protect the safety and reliability of both its infrastructure and high technology, and that SDG&E is prepared to respond to any security threat. Most substations receive transmission from multiple directions, and the utility also deploys electronic monitoring as well as active patrols, among other things, to protect the power grid. For KNSJ and East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Arielle Brook with an important health alert from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. 278 people have fallen ill with salmonella linked to raw chicken products produced by Foster Farms in California. The products in question have codes inside a USDA mark of inspection or elsewhere on the package. The codes are P6137, P6137A, or P7632. The products were mainly distributed to retail outlets in California, Oregon, and Washington State. The outbreak is continuing. The USDA reminds consumers to use a food thermometer to assure that chicken is thoroughly cooked to an internal temperature of 165 degrees, and also to be careful not to contaminate food preparation and cooking surfaces. Salmonella infections can be life-threatening, especially to those with weak immune systems, such as infants and the elderly. The most common symptoms of salmonella poisoning are diarrhea, cramps, chills, headache, nausea, and vomiting up to 7 days after eating contaminated food. Consumers with food safety questions can call the toll-free USDA Meat and Poultry Hotline at 1-888-MP-HOTLINE or 1-888-674-6854.
This is Ed Barena reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. The San Diego County Water Authority is warning residents to watch out for scam artists posing as fake water agency employees. Recently, imposters have been calling local residents and offering to test their water for pollution or contamination, but they're likely seeking opportunities for theft or fraud. The Water Authority and its member agencies are not responsible for fixing problems or testing inside private residences and rarely have reason to ask for entry. If a water agency were to need in-home contact, someone would call first to make an appointment. If anyone claiming to be a water utility employee comes to your home without an appointment, do not let them in and immediately contact your local water agency to verify their legitimacy. Actual water agency employees will have proper identification and will provide a supervisor's phone number at the agency for verification. They typically drive clearly marked agency vehicles with government license plates. Homeowners should check any phone number provided for verification with the number for their water agency on their water bill or in the phone book to make sure that it is legitimate. Any supposed water agency employee who refuses to wait while you are contacting the agency should be considered a fraud and reported to police. Utility scams can take many forms, including requests for bill payment with a credit card, demands that residents buy certain water treatment products such as filters or water softeners, and sales pitches for waterline insurance. In some cases, imposters go door to door. In others, they work by phone. Imposters may work in pairs with one person talking to the resident while the other cases the home for valuables. Don't be fooled by scamsters who demand that you pay a water bill with a credit card or face shutoff. And never give out your social security number or any other ID. If you're not sure which water agency serves your property, you can go to the San Diego County Water Authority website at sdcwa.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. My guest is Jeffrey Hedgecock. Jeffrey is a Ramona resident. He is the founder of Historic Enterprises and the World Joust Tournaments, which is the organizer of the upcoming Tournament of the Phoenix, which will be occurring in Poway very soon. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, can you tell us the dates and time and place of this unusual event?
The Tournament of the Phoenix, it's in its seventh year now, and it'll be happening in Poway at the Poway Rodeo Grounds, October 18th to 20th. The competition days are the Saturday and Sunday, the 19th and 20th.
Now, the competitions that you'll see there, folks, this is not like the Renaissance fairs. Jeff, tell us what this is all about.
Well, this is an honest competition. It's a true competition. It's not staged. Nothing is fake. We invite six of the best competitors, nightly competitors, the most experienced, the most skilled horsemen, to come in from all over the world. And they compete for 2 full days and accrue points. And then at the end, there's a winner.
Now, this is jousting with the lances?
It's primarily jousting. We have 4 sessions of jousting through the weekend, but we also have 2 other segments of the competition, which the first one on Saturday is poleaxe combat on foot. So we each try to score 3 good blows on the other guy that we're fighting. It's a one-on-one type of combat. Then on Sunday, we also have the club tourney, which is a melee situation where all six knights are in their full armor on horseback, and we get out there and beat each other with clubs to simulate a medieval mace.
So that sounds awfully dangerous. Do you have very many injuries that occur compared to other sports?
Well, if we didn't wear armor, it would be really, really dangerous. But luckily, the armor protects us quite well. So we do have small injuries, occasional concussions. We have some hand injuries occasionally. But for the most part, our armor protects us very well. And even though it is dangerous, we take the appropriate precautions.
Very interesting. Now, you are not just the organizer. You are in the thick of the battle out there. I understand that you're a former champion of this.
Well, I've won a few tournaments in the 10 years that I've been competing internationally. I've competed in 10 different countries around the world, from New Zealand all the way to Poland. I just won a tournament in France this last June. Yeah, I've been doing it for a while, and I am a competitor this year. I've competed in every one except the first one that we had in 2007.
Now, there's an interesting story behind the starting of that first one, I understand. Can you tell us about that?
Well, in 2007, the witch fires happened, starting in the East County, in East San Diego County. And it happened to be the weekend before the tournament weekend that we had planned to have it in late October. And the Sunday before the weekend that we were going to have the tournament, the fires occurred, and we got evacuated within a day of the fire starting. So we were down in Lakeside at an evacuation facility for the entire week leading up to the tournament.
Wow, with people here from all over the world for this thing.
Yeah, we did. We had people flying in from New Zealand and England and Belgium, and all of them had already arrived. And we decided to go ahead with the tournament, even though we only had one day of preparation, having been evacuated for the bulk of the week. So in a way, that first tournament was how the Tournament of the Phoenix got its name, because we had risen phoenix-like from the ashes of the fires.
Amazing. Wow. Now, how does a kid from Ramona get involved in international jousting, of all things? What sparked your interest in these knightly pursuits?
I had had an interest in armor since I was a kid. I did a report on it in school when I was about 9, 10 years old. And I got into making armor just after college in the mid-80s, and I immediately turned it into a business. I'd gotten an art degree, which helped me with the art aspects, the sculptural mm-hmm. aspects of making armor. But I'd always had an interest in the armed figure, the idea of a man clad in steel, and that the idea that the armor could stand on its own if it needed to, which turned out not to be the case, but it was kind of a fascination of mine when I started with it. I started making armor in the late 80s and then got into historical reenactment. And anytime you get into historical reenactment of the Middle Ages and you wear armor, you kind of think, I really want to joust at some point. You want to be a knight. You want to do it for real. And so it took me quite a while to find a situation of jousting that I was interested in. I really didn't like what I saw at the Renaissance fairs because it wasn't competitive. It was mostly staged. Mm-hmm. And there are other venues for jousting in the U.S., but none of them really appealed to me. So I went to England in 2003, and I saw jousting at the Royal Armouries Museum in Leeds. And 4 months later, I was competing there.
Very interesting. And the rest is history, so to speak. You're making history.
As it were, yes.
Yes. How much has the tournament grown through the years?
I believe our attendance at the first tournament was about 750 people, and we've grown to between 3,000 and 5,000 over the weekend.
So
the attendance has increased, although the number of competitors we typically have has stayed consistent, because the more competitors you have, you can only do so much jousting in a weekend. So the more competitors you have, the less each guy gets to do. And when you travel 3,000 to 6,000 miles to compete in a tournament, you want to get as much jousting in as you can. So if we had 12 or 15 competitors, everybody would get an awful lot less jousting.
So it's really a very elite competition. You have the top six, I understand, from around the world coming for this.
They are very, very skilled. I hesitate to use the term elite because that sort of implies some sort of snobbery or elitist situation. But essentially, all the guys who have chosen to come to our tournament, they have an extremely knightly attitude. They have incredible abilities. And they also have armor that looks pretty nice. So we look at our choice of competitors by attitude, ability, and appearance, and usually in that order. Because we have to work together and compete in a very dangerous sport and trust each other. And if some of the people don't have the right attitude, it doesn't quite work.
Now, these are not sports that one would typically think of as American, and yet I know several of the competitors are American. Are you sparking a renaissance of interest in jousting and these other medieval pursuits here in the United States, or for that matter, around the world, Jeff?
We would like to think that we're being an inspiration to other people who want to do this sort of thing, at least in this country. What we do, it does come from a European tradition, at least the type of jousting that we do comes from a European tradition.
Is there anything else that I didn't ask you that you'd like our listeners to know?
I would like to mention the Festival of History, which surrounds the tournament. Although the competition is the centerpiece of the event, the tournament is surrounded by what we call the Festival of History, which is a collection of some of the best reenactment groups and living history groups in Southern California. And they do lifestyle encampments, so people can get a real strong feel of what it was like to live during periods of history from Rome all the way to the Renaissance.
So I understand that includes things like falconry displays and swordsmanship displays. You can see the horses up close and music on instruments of the time. And are there vendors, crafters there as well?
We have a full complement of vendors. We have lots of food. We've chosen some really, really good food vendors. It's the sort of event that you can come to and be at the entire weekend if you choose to. You can even get seats right on the field. People can sit right on the field and see the action up close if they choose to.
Now, again, the competition is going to be October 18th, 19th, and 20th at the Poway Rodeo Grounds. Where can people go to get more information?
They can find out information about World Joust tournaments by visiting worldjoust.com, and then the actual event website is tournamentofthephoenix.com.
Very good, and we'll also have some information up on that in the festivals and events section at eastcountymagazine.org. Jeffrey, thank you very much for joining us here today, and we appreciate you coming in and wish
you
luck in the tournament coming up.
Thank you.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. Fall always brings great activities to East County, including harvest festivals and Halloween events. This week, we will preview local pumpkin patches, hay rides, haunted trains, and spooky parades. But first, Alpine Country Gifts and Crafts presents its 20th annual Craft and Harvest Festival to be held in Alpine. For three consecutive days, starting on Thursday, October 10th, and continuing through Saturday, October 12th, at the Alpine Women's Club on Alpine Boulevard, the event features crafts and handmade items, including owl nesting boxes and festive foods from the Women's Club kitchen. Santee is hosting a car show on Saturday, October 12th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The show will feature over 150 cars, 100 vendor booths, and kids' rides, and will be held at Mission Gorge Road and Riverview Parkway in Santee. The Poway branch of the San Diego County Library will hold a Woody Fest on Saturday, October 12th, in Poway, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Visitors can enjoy the music of Woody Guthrie as part of the second annual Woody Fest, performed by Ross Moore, Jeff Bertino, and friends. This event is sponsored by the Friends of the Poway Library. Lakeside Chamber of Commerce is hosting a chili cook-off to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Cedar Fire, with the name Beans, Beer, and Business. The event at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds will be held on Saturday, October 12th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and includes entertainment and vendor booths. The Lakeside Chamber is looking to connect with everyone who was affected by the fires and those who were so helpful in the rebuilding process. Champagne Brunch in the Pavilion has returned to Cottonwood Golf Club on Willow Glen Drive in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Breakfast and lunch items will be served, including carving and waffle stations, with mimosas and champagne. A fair trade gift fair will be held on Sunday, October 13th in La Mesa. A wide variety of handcrafted, fairly traded items will be available from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall on El Cajon Boulevard in La Mesa. Visitors can savor samples of Fairtrade certified ice cream, Ben & Jerry's, and coffee while perusing gift items such as handmade baskets, jewelry, clothing accessories, and an abundance of gift items. Also available for purchase will be Fairtrade chocolate, coffee, tea, bananas, and soda. Among the vendors participating in the gift fair are Around the World Gifts, The Purpose, Seven Hopes United, Malia Designs, Cool Beans Chocolates, Cafe Virtuoso, The Tomorrow Project, The Guatemala Project, Serve, and Vava Vida. The designation of fair trade signifies that artisans and farmers in the poorest areas of the world have received fair livable wages for their product or ingredients. In addition, certain standards must be met in the production process. These include protecting the environment, building economic sustainability, and providing opportunities for education and health care for families. Young children are protected from forced labor as well. The City of La Mesa will hold its fourth annual Senior Expo on Thursday, October 10th, at the La Mesa Community Center on Memorial Drive in La Mesa during the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. Now for some upcoming fall and Halloween events. The Campo Depot Museum has announced the 2013 Pumpkin Express in its 10th year at the Great Pumpkin event at the museum. Travel to the Great Pumpkin's Pumpkin Patch and tour the Haunted Train, where kids can pick out and decorate their own pumpkins. The trains are popular and seating is limited, so reservations are required. Trains leave at 10 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 2:30 p.m. The museum at the Campo Depot on State Highway 94 and Forest Gate Road recommends that riders arrive in Campo at least 45 minutes before departure time, especially if they haven't been to Campo before. The 48th Annual Borrego Days Desert Festival is a free weekend event beginning on Friday, October 25th from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. and continuing through Sunday, October 27th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Borrego Springs. The event offers family entertainment, a Saturday parade, artists, retail and food vendor booths, and the sounds of live entertainment floating through the desert air. The second annual Haunt Fest in El Cajon will be held on Friday, October 25th, from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., and is located at East Main Street and Rhea Avenue in El Cajon. Guests can enjoy live bands, a juried art show, costume contests, a haunted house, carnival rides for the kids, food, and more. Enjoy a spooky camp sleepover at Lions, Tigers, and Bears on Friday, October 26th and 27th. Guests can gaze at the stars and listen to the majestic sounds of the animals. Campers provide tent, breakfast, and dinner. A costume contest will be held on the morning of Saturday, October 26th. Lions, Tigers, and Bears will provide the s'mores. Nighttime spooky hayrides will be in motion at the Julian Mining Company in Julian. Hayrides begin at 7:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. on Saturday, October 26th. A fun and spooky hayride lasting approximately a half an hour, with embellished historical accounts of early miners, may frighten the faint of heart, but there will be nothing gory or violent in nature, and this hayride will be appropriate for all ages. Be there a half an hour before your hayride begins and enjoy complimentary popcorn, coffee, and hot apple cider while you wait. To reserve space in advance, see our calendar for October 26th at East County Magazine. Also at the Julian Mining Company, pick your own apples, pick your own pumpkin in the field, enjoy tractor-pulled hayrides, a gift shop, picnic area, petting zoo, and farm animals. They are open every Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Bates Nut Farm in Valley Center has pumpkins in the field, a maze, a gift shop, snack bar, picnic area, tractor-pulled hayrides, pony rides, and a petting zoo. Extended Saturday-Sunday hours in October are 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Weekend pumpkin packages are also available and includes one pumpkin, a hayride, and straw maze. Mountain Valley Ranch in Ramona has a pumpkin patch, corn maze, corn cannon, petting zoo, and gourds. Families can meander through the fields and pick their own pumpkin or select one inside the barn. They are open in October from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and are located on Highway 78 in Ramona. Oma's Pumpkin Patch at Van Omering Dairy has a pumpkin patch, hayride, hay maze, petting zoo, sand pile, and is located on El Monte Road in Lakeside. They are open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., but closed Sunday and Monday. Summer's Past Farm in Flynn Springs on Old Highway 80 has a pumpkin patch, alpacas from East County Alpaca Breeders, and kids' activities. They are open weekends in October on Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Boulevard Boo Parade is returning to the college area near San Diego State on Saturday, October 26th, starting at 10 a.m. Organizers say that this Halloween-themed parade is bigger and spookier than ever, with more floats, music, and costumed participants. Later that day, the Ray and Joan Kroc Center hosts its annual Boo Bash from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., just minutes from the parade. The Heart Mural Project of Ramona is presenting the first annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival, to be held at the historic Amy Strong Castle at Mount Woodson. The festival will be held on November 2nd from noon to 6 p.m. Art, wine, and food enthusiasts may visit RamonaArtAndWineFest.net. The event features local artists, Ramona wineries, and local chefs, each of which will be located around the castle. Musicians will provide elegant background music as patrons browse the creations of 15 fine artists, sip award-winning wines from 12 wineries, and taste the culinary delights of 5 local chefs. And then the last preview. The Phoenix rises for the 7th year at the Tournament of the Phoenix and Festival of History in Poway next weekend, from October 18th through the 20th at the Poway Rodeo Grounds. Knights in shining armor astride chargers, the crack of shattered lances, the flash of swords, live music, food, and fun all return to Poway October 18th through 20th at the Tournament of the Phoenix. Jousting knights from the United States, Poland, New Zealand, and the Netherlands compete in a 6-event competition. The audience can also explore hands-on history as the Festival of History presents Rome to the Renaissance. Also, there will be various games, crafts, activities, skill contests, and the opportunity to meet the knights at the Knights Camp. Artisan crafts, booths, food, and live music will round out the event. All of these activities and more can be found in our Festival and Events section and on our calendar at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing writer, editor, and publishing consultant Jennifer Silva Redmond. For more than a decade, my guest served as editor-in-chief of Sunbelt Publications, an award-winning small press here in San Diego. She also founded Sea of Cortez Review and was prose editor of San Diego Writers, Inc. 2010 anthology called A Year in Ink, Volume 3. Welcome, Jennifer. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio with me. Let's start with your role as publishing consultant, or book midwife, as you used to call yourself. What do these titles mean to you, and why might a writer need a midwife?
Well, every writer needs someone to help them bring the project to fruition. Right. And that used to be always the editor at a publishing company. Mm-hmm. And now publishing companies either don't have editors that work on individual projects, or they just don't have the time to work with people to draw out the best of them and to draw out the best for the book and to help with structure and, to, of course, all the other stuff that happens down the road with, you know, marketing and selling books. So somebody really needs someone to be an advocate for them and say, this story is great. Here's what needs to change. Here's right. what, you know, here's where the structure is falling apart or needs some help. And then also to maybe guide them through this new world of all the choices that are available to authors, from e-publishing to indie publishing and being a publisher author.
Right. So as the times change and the traditions mm-hmm. change, you're sort of filling that gap that editors used to play.
Exactly. And because there's so many choices available now, I recently worked with Orit Arfa on her book, The Settler, which came out this year. And she was offered traditional publishing. She was offered different types of partner publishing as well and decided to publish on her own. And I think that for her, that really was smart. And I know a lot of people that have their own little presses where they bring out their own books and they're in control of it. And I think that's great as long as you look at it as a business and you hire good people to work with you, because, you know, there's just too much stuff out there that's, as we like to call it, premature e-publication.
It's interesting, though, that there's so many, for the first time in history, there are so many choices, and I guess writers still need someone to maybe help them make the right choice?
Absolutely. They need somebody to look at it and see what needs work, mm-hmm. to look at it and look at the shape of it. And this is just talking about the writing, mm-hmm. but then also to say, okay, let's go with Create Space and try the e-publishing. Let's bring it out as an e-book and see how that works. Let's do some excerpts. Now let's try and do the publishing of the physical book. There's just so many choices right now. And I look at that as a great thing. It's a renaissance right now right. for publishing.
And who knows really which way is. It will go.
It's going to go every way. There is no one way. It's going to, all these things are going to coexist. E-publishing is still just a small portion of the money that is out there in traditional publishing. Hardcover sales actually went up last year. Wow. Most people don't either hear that news or don't want to hear it.
Right.
So it's going to be a coexistence for many years.
Well, I know you're a writer yourself. You've had essays, articles, and short fiction published in anthologies such as Latinos in Lotus Land, interesting title, and in national magazines. What would you say is dearest to your heart, the writing itself, editing and shaping other people's work, or finding new talent?
Well, finding new talent is a high. It really is. I mean, writing for yourself is great. And at the end of a day of writing, I feel great. I love it. I love working on other people's stuff and being able to, as Michelangelo said, take away everything that isn't the sculpture.
Ooh.
You know, just yeah. take away the rest of that marble and, uh-huh. and leave the work of art. But when you find somebody new and you love the way they write, I'm currently working on a memoir. And I think this woman's book is going to do really well, and that's exciting to me. I want to go tell everybody I know about it. So when I go to conferences, I'm always got my new thing that I want to tell people about. Oh, you got to read Nancy's mm-hmm. book, you know, or something. And I also meet lots of new authors and get to know people's books that I don't work on or that I work with or that are peers mm-hmm. that teach at the conferences. So it's very exciting to meet new voices.
You're a strong part of the community.
I really love being out there. I love being a resource for people. I mean, I really started that at Sunbelt, and Sunbelt has been great as a resource for local authors here in San Diego and also in California as a distributor and a publisher. And I really wanted to put us on the map as the place that mm-hmm. people would go with their questions. And I'm still doing that on my own, which I'm loving.
I know the Sea of Cortez Review was a literary publication featuring writing inspired by Baja California. Tell me more about that publication and how it led to the work you did today.
Well, my husband and I were living on a boat in Mexico for a number of years. We still live on a boat, but not in Mexico. And some friends of ours said, you guys should do a magazine. And we thought you liked us. that sounds like a lot of work.
Yes.
But we did one annually for 3 years, 98, 99, and 2000, 2001 was a joint year issue. And Sunbelt Publications ended up distributing those for us, which was wonderful, and how I got involved with them. So that was what helped me. I had been an editor for years and a writer, and it helped me find my place in the publishing world and also learn a lot about marketing, which I did not know about, which is why our magazine existed for 3 years and was a labor of love and not, you know, it was a wonderful experience.
That's good that you feel that way about it, since marketing is part of the piece now.
Oh, it is the piece. I mean, if people aren't thinking about their audience when they're sitting down to write, they're doing a huge disservice to themselves and right. to the community. I mean,
and
they
the
need to know who their readership mm-hmm. is. And if they don't know it, they're just, you know, writing in a garret, and that's fine if you enjoy writing for yourself. But if you want to market it, you've got to know who you're writing for from word one. And that's what I talk about a lot at the conferences.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're a regular speaker to groups of readers and writers, and you're on the staff of the Southern California Writers Conference. What would you say if you had to identify the most challenging issue or aspect to the craft for most writers and authors, apart from marketing, the craft?
Absolutely. I think the biggest problem for writers is looking at their story holistically. Mm-hmm. We get so involved in each chapter and maybe within that in each paragraph or whatever, you know, our character is off doing something that we find really interesting, but that tangents are wonderful and some of the greatest writers are very tangential, you know, from Tom Robbins to James Joyce. I mean, they'd wand you off down interesting trails, but the problem is the tangent has to serve the story. The story is a one person's journey, if you will. And everything has to serve that story. And that's the thing that is, other than the business part of it, looking at it as a business, that you are a business person and an author publisher, not just an author. That's the biggest challenge, I think, for writers now is to think of their structure as an important part of telling the story and think of themselves as an important part of the business.
That's very helpful. One last question, Jennifer. What are you writing next?
I am working on two novels, but I'm also working on a screenplay. My husband and I write screenplays together, and we recently had a short film, El Camino Real, published, produced here in San Diego. We formed a production company, Work With Me Films, with our producer-director, David McClendon. So that came out early this year, and we're looking now for funding to do a feature film about it. I will send you the link to the trailer. It's out there.
Okay. Well, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us. For more information on Jennifer Redmond, please visit her website at www.jennyredbug.com. And again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is a special announcement from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. Community leaders and Cedar Fire survivors will dedicate a historic memorial to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the worst wildfire in California history. The ceremony will take place on October 26th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at River Park Fire Station in Lakeside. The event will also honor first responders and celebrate fire survivor families' lifelong connection as guests pause to reflect, remember, and reconnect. There will be exhibits, disaster prevention program information, book signings by Sandra Younger, the author of The Fire Outside My Window, a VFW band, food and beverages, a moment of remembrance, and appreciation for community support. Speakers will include Supervisor Diane Jacob, Fire Chief Andy Parr from Lakeside, David Castle from the Cedar Fire Rebuilding Resource Group, and presentations will be made from the offices of Senator Joel Anderson, Assemblyman Brian Jones, and Congressman Duncan Hunter. The Cedar Fire was the largest wildland fire in California history. It started 25 miles east of San Diego in the Cleveland National Forest when a hunter became lost and lit a small fire to signal for help on the evening of October 25th, 2003. It quickly spread out of control. By the time containment was declared on October 28th, the Cedar Fire had destroyed 280,278 acres, 2,820 buildings, and killed 15 people, nearly all of them in Lakeside's Wildcat Canyon. Damage occurred across the county, but nowhere was the toll more devastating than Lakeside, where the firestorm roared through the night, catching many people unaware of the approaching inferno. The Cedar Fire continues to hold the tragic record as the state's worst wildfire in total acreage burned, homes destroyed, and lives lost. For more information on the October 26th memorial event, you can visit www.lakesidefire.com. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This is Miriam Raftery for KNSJ with a wet and wild weather update. A cold front is moving across our region, bringing rainfall and snow is forecast in our mountain areas above 5,500 feet Wednesday night. A high wind warning has been issued also, with gusts up to 65 miles an hour possible, so be careful if you're driving out there. Now the weather should start warming up again Thursday, just in time for the weekend and lasting through early next week.
This is Rebecca Williamson with East County Magazine. I'm here with Sierra Robinson, one of our interns. She's a senior at High Tech High School. She interned with us last year, and she liked it so well, she's back again. Sierra, tell us how your internship works.
Well, at High Tech High, juniors find their own internships, and they immerse themselves for a total of 3 weeks. Last year, I shadowed Miriam Raftery at East County Magazine and got an in-depth look at many aspects of journalism.
You wrote a number of stories on emerging green technologies. Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, I wrote stories about green roofs, solar roadways, and even flying wind turbines.
What other topics did you cover?
There were tons of fun topics, such as a restaurant review and fashions at a resale clothing shop. I also covered some serious topics, such as going to the scene of a search for a missing person and covering a judicial candidates forum.
What did you learn from the experiences as an intern at East County Magazine?
I learned how to post stories online, what it felt like to interview people, and it was just really exciting to learn about all these different things and topics that I never thought would be interesting to me. And every day was something new.
Where are you going from here?
I plan on going to Grossmont Community College for my first 2 years and then transferring. I'm hoping to major in creative writing or English.
Great. And now our editor, Miriam Raftery, is going to tell us about opportunities for any listeners who may be interested in internships.
We have opportunities for interns all over the place, part-time and full-time. We've had a lot of college-level interns, as well as some high school ones. And as a nonprofit media outlet, we also welcome community volunteers. Our interns and our volunteers can get great experiences here, and some of them have actually gone on to win major journalism awards and land jobs in journalism careers.
Thanks. And for information on how to get involved with East County Magazine's award-winning online news and station KNSJ 89.1 from Descanso, contact the editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.